Ladies and gentlemen, let's start. We are on page 38. 38 in the Don Chumashim. Top line. Story up to now. Noach, the flood water stopped. The Teva, the Ark, landed on Mount Ararat. At the end of 40 days, Noach opens the window, sends out the raven, comes back. He was afraid, he didn't even go because he was afraid somebody was going to do something wrong with his mate. Okay, then it says like this. He waited and he sent the Yonah, the dove. And the dove also couldn't find a place, so the dove came back to the ark. Noach stuck out his hand, brought the Yonah, the dove, back into the ark. Okay? Now, the pasuk says like this, V'yachol eit shivas yomim achedim. He waited another 7 weeks, which means the first time he also waited 7 weeks. Even though the Torah doesn't say explicitly that he waited 7 days before sending out the dove after the raven. But we understand it from this pasuk, because he said he waited another 7 days, which means he waited 7 days, and this is another 7 days. Yosef shalacha seyena min ateva. He sent out the yena from the teva. Okay? Now, why did he wait another week? Simply, the Mefoshim say, because he wanted to give time for the water to recess, to come down. That was an interesting pasuk. Vateva elav hayena le'esedev. The yena came back in the evening. Vine alei zayis tarav befiyah. There was an aleph leaf. There was an aleph leaf in its, in its mouth, so to speak, in its beak. Okay? Sounds very simple. He sent out the dove a second time. The dove came back with an olive leaf. The only problem is, where did he get it from? And now that's a whole interesting discussion amongst the commentators. If the ark, if the flood destroyed everything in the world, how in the world did he come back with an olive leaf? Okay? First of all, one thing we should say, why did he come back with an olive? What's the uniqueness the Torah emphasizes in Alei Zayis? The olive leaf is very bitter. But the Torah is teaching us, it's better to have bitter livelihood from God than abundance from people. Rashi quotes this. Rashi says, here, Medrash Agada, Amra, she said, Yehim is a nice merudin kazayas. My food, my livelihood, my sustenance should be bitter like an olive in the hand of God, and not sweet like honey in the hands of people. In other words, I'd rather live from God poorly than live richly having to rely on other human beings, because they you know what they do to you. Oh, okay, I didn't know you were here. Okay. Anyway, let's see what the story...
I begged him last night to come yesterday at the wedding.
It's her fault.
Right, in other words, it's her fault.
Yeah. And I saw him.
Why? Don't do many favors. Okay, next. So the question over here is, how did he get this olive tree? Okay, so the Ramban says that because seemingly... the flood waters were boiling hot. They were raging waters. I mean, so he says like this. Rab Levi says, the dove got its thing from Mount Olives because the flood waters did not fall in the land of Israel. Remember we learned that the flood was all over the world except the land of Israel. Nevertheless, how did the corrupt people in Israel die if the flood didn't hit Israel? So the answer is, the rain didn't fall in Israel, but the water from the rest of the world, obviously, when you have water from all over the place, it came into Israel. So according to this opinion, because the flood wasn't so powerful in Israel, bottom line was, he was able to get the olive leaf from Mount Olives in Eretz Yisrael, Har HaZeisim.
Not to sound like a wise guy, but why didn't the people go up on Har HaZeisim? Why didn't the people go up there?
Oh, because it would have killed them anyway. Just it wasn't powerful enough to destroy, to uproot the trees. Okay, and another opinion in the Medrash says, Gan Eden opened up, And he took the olive tree from there. Okay, one second. There's a problem with all this, by the way. The problem with these two opinions so far is, yeah, if he got it from Gan Eden, or he got it from Israel, right, how does that prove that the water subsided all the rest of the world? Why did Noach send out the dove? To see if the water subsided, right, if he can go out of the ark. But if he brought it from Gan Eden, or he brought it from Israel, how in the world does that prove to Noach that the water subsided where the ark was? It's very difficult to understand. The Ramban says that obviously the waters didn't fall, meaning the leaf was taken, Gan Eden was unaffected by the flood. Okay. The Barbanel says like this. The Barbanel learns differently. Many olive branches were floating on the surface of the water. They did uproot it. They were floating on top of the water. And therefore, they would have been stuck in the mud, okay, when the water receded. So therefore, the olive tree, the branches that were loose, sunk into the mud and produced olive leaf. But the question is, the problem with that opinion is, in 40 days, it ain't grown, no olive leaves. Right? The water subsided. 40 days later, he sent out the raven. A week later, he sent out the dove. A week later, he sent out the dove. So it's 52 days. In 52 days, from the time the branch of the olive regrew into the ground, it's not going to produce an olive leaf.
It was leaf or it was the olive?
Leaf. No.
Right.
Alei Zayas. Olive leaf. Alei is a leaf, not a branch. In Hebrew, alei is a leaf. He came back with a leaf.
The branch, you can't pick it up everywhere. It flows in the water, you can't pick it up. There's no need to be a trees to make it
If everything got destroyed, don't forget, the water was hot. Everything got destroyed. So the question, where actually did he get it from? Okay. So now they're like this. One second. Okay, the problem with all this is,
and no one knew the water subsided. I mean, makes no sense.
Yeah, but okay. The olive tree is extremely hardy variety and it resists extreme conditions. In fact, the Gemara says in many places the olive tree is very, very strong. So it's possible, in the simple meaning, that the olive tree didn't uproot itself from the flood. Therefore, the literal level, that other trees were uprooted by the flood, but the olive tree didn't. Therefore, he brought back the dove with a fresh olive leaf that came back from after the flood. So bottom line, that's on the Yachnu, that the water subsided. According to the other opinions, the problem is, how did he get the olive tree? And how did that prove that the water subsided? If he got it from Eretz Yisrael, he got it from Gan Eden, how is it going to be? Okay, so now... What?
The olive reflects future lighting of the menorah candle.
Yeah, but there's nothing to do with this. Okay. Now, the fact that the dove came back shows that if he found a place to rest, then the dove wouldn't have come back completely. Okay? Why did Noach wait another week? Because the Medrash perceives the Jews are likened to dove. In other words, the dove is sent out. This is what the Medrash says. But the dove always comes back to its source. The Jews are called Yoina. Yoinasi, Samasi, many psukim call the Jewish people Yoina, the dove. A Jew never finds a resting place, only back in the Teva, which was a place of Torah mitzvahs. So just as a dove finds no resting place, the Jews don't find a resting place in Galus. As long as the Shechina is in Galus, the dove found no rest, because again, the dove symbolizes the Jewish people. It says, L'yotza ayena menech l'kaf ragla, the first one. But the second one, v'yeda neach, and then neach understood that what? Kikalu amayim me'ar aletz. Then neach knew that everything rested from the earth, the flood was over, the waters came down, and it's time for him to be able to come down. Okay. Now,
why you pick up this kind of bird?
Huh?
Why pick up this kind of bird?
Bird?
Yeah, the dove.
Because the Jews are likened to the dove. And unlike the Orev, the raven, it says a Yonah is a bird that always stays with its mate. Yonah never goes to another mate. So Yonah represents purity. Purity and all that stuff. Okay. Now the fact that he waited until evening, and there's another thing. Why does the Pasuk say he came back in the evening? Who was the difference when he came back? He came back with an olive leaf in his mouth. It has to be in the evening. So Noach understood that obviously, where did he do? So he sent him out Mistam in the morning. Right? Everything's done in the morning. The fact that he came back in the evening shows that he did find places to rest during the day. He can't fly straight. The bird can't fly straight for a whole day. So obviously, that's what the Torah is emphasizing. The fact that the Yonah came back, the dove came back in the evening, so then Noach understood that obviously, during the day, he did find places to relax and to rest. So therefore, okay. What happened the third time? He waited another 7 days. He sent away the Yonah, and it never came back to him. Okay? Because now, for sure.
What about its mate?
No, his mate was still in the ark, and they met. They met in the air. Later on. Okay. Now, according to various opinions, this was the first of Tishrei, the next pasuk. Vayhi ba'achas v'sheish me'yishana. It was in the 601st. Remember, the flood started when Noach was 600. The flood lasted a year. So in the 601st year of Noach's life, Barishen Be'echod Lachedesh, on the first day of the first month, so some opinions say Tishrei, some people say Av, some people say Elul, depending when the flood started, Chorvo Amayim Mi'al Ha'aretz, it became completely dry. Okay? So bottom line is, this is the day Chorvo Amayim Mi'al Ha'aretz, it completely dried up, but the earth was swampy, like he still couldn't walk on it. Rashi says it was dry, but you still, it was full of mud. Can you imagine? It's all the way down. okay. Vayasa Noach es michsi ha-teva. Noach took off the covering from the teva. So the Mefarshim explained an interesting thing. Nowhere does it say he made a covering for the ark. But you know, Torah is what's called, the Gemara uses the expression, Torah is poor in some places and rich in others. Meaning, a lot of times Torah says a fact later that shows the fact existed earlier, but the Torah didn't mention it. For instance, the Torah doesn't mention that Noach made a covering for the ark. It doesn't say anywhere he made a covering. Here the Pasuk says he removed the covering from the ark, which means obviously there was a covering of the ark, even though the Torah didn't say it before. He saw it was dry, but like we just said, the surface was dry, but it was really very muddy. And therefore, he couldn't go out yet. He still didn't go out. Okay, so this is the first day of the first month. So now he says, on the 27th day of the second month, that's when it was completely dry. So after it dried completely, there was another month and 27 days that the earth became completely dry.
So we're talking about Iyar?
Well, it depends. As I told you, either Tishrei or Elul. Some people say it was Nisan. Some people say it was Tishrei. Because the first month could be Nisan, it could be Tishrei, depending how you go about it. Okay, then it became completely dry. Okay? Now, the truth of the matter is that the flood was a year plus 11 days. So you make a cheshbon, from the time the flood started until the whole thing ended was a year and 11 days. So the question is, if wicked people burn in Gehenna, why we learned, why did the whole ordeal take a year? Because wicked people burn in Gehenna, in hell, for 12 months. Right? So Hashem punished them. This was the hell for all these people that died, so to speak. So Hashem made it a whole year. So the commentators ask, well, why did he make it a year and 11 days? It should have been exactly a year. So Rashi says, the lunar year has 354 days. Not a leap year. A regular lunar year. It's 354 days. Solar calendar is 365 and a quarter. But round it up. 365. So it's 11 days different. So he says like this. Because the wicked people who worshipped idols worshipped the sun and the solar system. So therefore Hashem kept them the solar year instead of the lunar year. In other Jewish people, that's what Rashi said, that's why, because the Medrash says the year corresponds with the punishment in Gehenna for a year. So why did Hashem make it another 11 days? Because normally Gehenna goes on the Jewish calendar. It's the lunar calendar, which is 354 days in a year. This is 365, but because they worship the sun in the solar system and all the idols, so therefore Hashem made them burn their year, which was 365 days.
Punishment, it's a place. Say it's a place for cleansing. You know, when they describe
Gehinnom,
they always say punishment. But isn't it a really a form of cleansing?
Punishment is cleansing.
Punishment.
Punishment is cleansing.
I understand.
When courts punish somebody, they give them lashes, correct? That's punishment?
Correct.
Or it's cleansing?
Well, that's punishment.
The punishment is the cleansing.
Correct.
That's what Torah holds. We're not like the other religions,
but it's worth it.
To remain nameless, that the Gehenna is a damnation and you're damned there and you're, you know, that old stuff. Gehenna is, the punishment of Gehenna is a cleansing process. When Beis Din, this is a unique concept, by the way, it's only in Judaism. When the courts punish somebody, whether it's capital punishment, or it's lashes, or whatever else, other punishments the court might give. As far as the Torah is concerned, it's all a punishment which is cleansing. That's the purpose of the punishment, to cleanse the person, to cleanse the person from the evil. And therefore, like we learned many times, in Jewish law, there is a concept of jail, but there is no punishment as far as jail goes. In Torah, there's no such thing. The guy does a certain crime, he sits 5 years in jail, 10 years in jail, 30 years in jail. There's no such thing in Yiddishkeit. Jail doesn't exist in Yiddishkeit as a punishment. Sometimes they don't know what punishment they get. In Chumash, you have the Mekoshe Shetim, they didn't know what punishment he got, so they put him into prison, and so they locked him up until Hashem told them what the punishment is. Other punishments we learned in the Gemara Sanhedrin, that sometimes a person keeps doing over and over and over and over the same sin, but there are no witnesses, so they stick him into a dungeon, then they make his stomach plots, whatever. Bursts open. But there's no concept in Torah of jail term. And the Rebbe explained once with a very beautiful explanation of the whole concept of punishment in Torah. Torah believes in bringing people back into society. Rehabilitation. That's the Torah approach. Rehabilitate the person to bring him back into why? A person is supposed to lead a constructive life. Hashem creates a person. Adam Lamal Yevalet Eev says, a person is created to work. A person's purpose in life is to be constructive. Okay? So therefore, let's say somebody ate not kosher, was warned in the whole shtick, you know, and therefore he's going to get lashes. What is the lashes? It cleanses you for your sin, and now the Torah says, get back into the world and live. If there's capital punishment, that means the crime that the person did was so bad, they forfeited their life to live a constructive life. That's why the Torah gives capital punishment. But the capital punishment is the cleansing for the person's sin that they did in this world. Certain sins, it's enough to lash a whip him, malchus, which is a cleansing. Sometimes you need capital punishment to cleanse the person. But to put a person into jail where they do nothing, and most of them become more hardcore criminals in jail, like everybody knows. So the terrorist, that's against the whole concept of what a person, what a human being's life is supposed to be. A human being's life is supposed to be constructive. To put away a person for a good part of his life, or even a little bit of his life, in a non-constructive environment is totally contrary to Torah. So therefore, there's no jail term. Torah says, if you're able to, rehabilitate the person. Change him, get him to change his ways, you know, educate him, whatever it is, and let him get back into society again. How do we get into... Oh, you put Gehenim. Oh, God. Okay, forget it. Okay, now, he's still... So, Lepreel, after a year and 11 days, from the start to the finish, the world is completely dry, ready to go. Yeah? So now Hashem spoke to Moshe, to Noach. Okay? Now, normally, what does the word lemar mean? When Chumash says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Vayoyim Hashem al Moshe lemar. Just because I said I might be late doesn't mean you should be late. Okay, normally it says in Chumash, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, lemar. What does lemar mean? To tell it over to the Jews. That's the word lemar. To tell it over to other. Vayidaber Elokim al Hashem al Moshe, lemar, to say it over to other people. Vayidaber Elokim al Noach lemar, who's the lemar? To whom is he repeating it? Okay? So the Mefarshim say simply, his children, his wife, his daughters-in-law, the animals, yeah. In fact, there's another interesting law. The Gemara doesn't learn, they learned this. You know, it's a very interesting law that nobody keeps. But there's a law in Torah that if I tell you something, you're not allowed to say it to anybody else unless if I give you permission. You know, there's such a law in Torah. It's a din shulchan aruch. If I tell you something, I don't know if anybody keeps this law, but there is such a law. If I tell you something, you're not allowed to tell it over unless if I give you permission. Where do they learn this out from? Believe it or not. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemer. What does lemer mean? Tell it over. That means if Hashem didn't tell him to tell it over, he wouldn't be allowed to tell it over.
What about if you do something? Yeah, but the teacher is teaching the student.
We're not talking about Torah. Torah you have to teach to others. I'm saying if I tell you good Lashon Hara, or bad Lashon Hara, whatever, something juicy.
There's good Lashon Hara?
Oh, Lashon Hara is the best.
If you don't say somebody, don't tell anybody, means you can give somebody information.
Once we do know that if a man was told something by his neighbor, he may not spread the news without being told, Lech Emor, or Lemor, that you, and we learn nothing, that was Shammah Meshul Lemor. It's a din shulach.
But if you say you don't tell anybody, then you...
That's when you dafka do tell it. What do people do? Come on, let's be real. Be real. When you tell them not...
If you tell them not...
When a kid is carrying a tray and you tell them don't drop it or don't spill it, that's when they drop it. If you be quiet, they wouldn't drop it, right? No. Okay. Now, the question is, the Mefarshim also said, why does it say here Elokim? It should say Vayidaber Hashem. Elokim is din, judgment, severity. He said because Elokim means nature. Hashem is telling Noach, get back into the nature of the world. Go rebuild the world, so to speak, which is nature. So it uses the word Elokim. Okay, same in Ateva. Go out from the ark, after you, v'ishtecha and your wife, v'necha your sons, u'nesheva necha and your wives of your sons, itoch together with you. So you see a few things over here. Number one, remember when it spoke about going into the ark, it says, you, your sons, your wife and their wives. Men separate, women separate. Like we learned before, during the duration of the 12 months, they were not allowed to have marital relations. Now, because that's what Hashem said, go separately. Men separate, women separate, I mean no marital relation. But now that the flood was over, So what does Hashem say to him? Go out from the ark, you and your wife,
together,
and your sons and their wives. But you'll see in a few psukim, he's going to change it again, which is interesting. He's going to say Noach his sons, his wife and the daughters. We'll see why later. Okay, so the question is, the obvious question is, why in the world did Hashem have to tell him get out? I mean, he should have ran out. Why did Hashem tell him Seimen Ateva? And he told them, by the way, Noach didn't go out. Noach didn't go out until Hashem said go out. Why? The Medrash says, because Noach said, I didn't go in until God told me to go in. I'm not going to go out until God tells me to go out. Very simple. Balabatish, like they say. Hashem told me to go in. Until he tells me to go out, I'm staying put. Okay? Hashem told me to go in. I stay until he tells me to go out. In Zayat, in Kabbalah, it says another reason why Hashem had to tell him to go. Noach didn't want to go out. As crowded as he was, as beat up as he was from the lion, kicked and bitten, and that. Okay. But it says, we mentioned this before, it says in the Zayar, in the Teva, in the Ark, all the animals live together in harmony. They might have had their own cages, but come on, you know, you get loose after a while. What's the era of Mashiach? What does the Pasuk say? The Garzev, in Keves, the wolf and the lamb are going to live side by side. The enemy animals are going to live side by side. There's going to be such peace in the world. So it says in the Zayar that the era of the Teva, the year in the Teva, was the revelation of Mashiach. And therefore all the animals got along. How would he mean it was the era of Mashiach and all the animals get along? There was such a great revelation of godliness, which is above any opposites, and therefore opposites get along. We say, we learned this many times, at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, in benching, we say, Oise Shalom B'mreimav, Hu Yase Shalom Aleinu, it's a lot of nice songs about it. Oise Shalom B'mreimav means, the God that makes peace on high, B'mreimav, in the heavens, Hu Yase Shalom Aleinu should make peace on us. The simple meaning, what peace does God make in heaven? What peace does God make in heaven? So the Medrash says very simple. There's a guy up there called Michal. He's the angel of water. There's another guy called Gavriel. He's the angel of fire. Michal is chesed. Gavriel is gvura. Kindness, severity, which are two opposites. Yeah? So what goes on? Gavriel and Michal up there are good buddies. How could they be good buddies if fire and water cannot be good buddies? So the answer is, God reveals himself to them, and then they feel the cause. They feel they're dedicated to the cause. And in a cause, when you're dedicated to the cause, there is unity amongst opposites. You see this in world, in many different places, but just to mention a few of them. The human body has a lot of contradictory organs in it. The head and heart are contradictory. The mind is cold. The heart is warm. I mean, not only intellectually, emotional, mamish opposites. There's a lot of organs in the body that mamish are contradicting each other. Yeah? They clash with each other. How does the head and the heart get along in the body? There's no fight between the head and the heart. The answer is because they're all subjugated and bottled to the cause. Two opposites. If they're bottled to the cause, that means they forget about themselves. For you sports guys, I will tell you a sports quote. There was a certain coach, there was a coach that was working his team over really hard. And again and again, and he said to the coach, you know, enough, come on. He said, you know what I'm going to stop? When the name on the front of your uniform means the same as the name on the back of your uniform. The back of your uniform is the guy's individual name. In the front is the team name. Okay? In order for a team to win, there is no me. You don't have, how many people in basketball?
Five.
Five. If five people in basketball, if everybody's gonna wanna make all the shots because he wants to get more, it's not gonna work. Okay? There's no me in sports, there's a us. There's the team. So, when there's a cause, opposite things unite. But you have that in a lot of other things, a symphony. Yeah? Do you know there are a lot of instruments that actually clash against each other? Okay? Yet, what's the beauty of a symphony? When you have opposite types of instruments, but they're blending together in harmony. What does it mean they're blending together in harmony? The trumpet is not the trumpet, and the saxophone is not the saxophone, and the guitar is not a guitar. It's the symphony. And the conductor is the uniting force, so to speak, between all the forces. Okay, so what's the greatness of Mashiach's era that the wolf and the lamb are going to sit by peacefully? It means there's going to be such a revelation of God that opposites will all be bottled to the cause, bottled to godliness. That greatness existed during the Mabul, in the Teva. In the Ark, all the animals lived peacefully. Why? Because it was a revelation like the era of Mashiach. Noach says, you know, it was a tough year. Like you said, he got kicked and bitten and they were coughing blood and all that stuff. Noach said, you know what? I don't want to get out of this place. This place is too great. Hashem had to tell him, get out of the ark. Now, what does that mean in a practical sense? At the beginning we said, the Baal Shem Tov said, that the ark, bayala teva, come into the teva. The Baal Shem Tov said that the word teva, besides ark, is word. Words. Teva. What words are we talking about? Torah and Tefillah. Right? Teva is, there's a lot of, to put it in clear terms, there's a lot of floodwaters out there. The business world, the anti-Semitic world, there's a lot of jungle out there that actually wants to destroy the Jew. So there comes a time Hashem says to Noach, you want to be saved from the floodwaters that want to destroy Judaism? You have to come into the Teva. You have to come into the words of Torah, Tefillah, you know, then you'll be protected. But it comes a time that God says, okay, enough in Koilel, now go out and be productive in the world. Be productive in the world. Go either teach, go spread Yiddish, go into business, but the right thing to know what to do with, you know, like a Jew should have business. Davening and learning and business and tzedakah and all that. So Hashem tells Noach, same in Ateva. Now that there's a flood is over, the world is destroyed, go and rebuild. Which is what the Rebbe spoke about very many times. You know, there's certain, and it's all Torah, it's all ways of Torah, but you know, the beauty of Torah, that there are so many different opinions and customs and all that, yeah? Yeah, people that stay, like in the Litvisha world, they stay in Kerala for many years after they get married. Yeah? Many people will, so to speak, ghetto themselves up. They'll lock themselves up in their ghetto. They don't want to be influenced by the outer world over there. So they move into, you know, the frum ghettos. I don't mean the ghettos that the Nazis made. The Jewish made ghettos. Huh? The borough parks and the Williamsburgs and the Bnei Braks and the Meir Shalim, nothing personal. And all those things, you know, which from their perspective, they're doing to protect themselves. Okay? That's coming into the Teva. Protect yourself from the outer influences of the world. But there's another opinion out there that says, listen, yes, you want to learn. Yes, you want to daven. It's very good. It's great. But when there's a fire burning out there in the world, there's a floodwaters that want to destroy Judaism, there comes a time you have to go out of your ark, you have to go out of your ghetto, and rebuild the world. rebuild the world. The world was destroyed. This happened, I mean, as far as our times, after the Holocaust, the Jewish world was destroyed. A good part of the Jewish world was destroyed. Okay? So what was the role then of the Jews? To go and rebuild Judaism. Judaism was destroyed by the Nazis and the Russians and everybody else. Go rebuild Yiddishkeit. So Hashem is telling Noach over here, Tzei min ha-teva. Yes, at one time for the floodwaters, raging floodwaters, you have to protect yourself. You have to go into the ghetto of the Teva. But now it's over. The world needs to be rebuilt. You're not going to do it sitting in the Teva. You're not going to do it sitting in the box. Because how are you going to rebuild the world if you're not in the world? Go out, say min ha-teva, and that's what he says. You, your wife, your kids, meaning spiritually, what's the first mitzvah? Purvo, be fruitful, multiply. Okay, that's physically. What's the spiritual aspect of be fruitful and multiply? Make another Jew. Create another Jew. We learned Vishinantam Levanecha Vidibartabam. Teach your children. Rashi says, what are the children? Your students. What's the first mitzvah? Purvo. Go out and teach Torah to people that they should know about it. That's what the mitzvah purvo. So this is what Hashem says to Noach. Go out of your ark. Go out. And now there's a destroyed world. Go. You and your wife, meaning male and female, sons and females, to go rebuild the world that was destroyed through the ark. Okay. Then it says like this. Kol ha-chaya asher itcha, all the beasts, meaning all living flesh that was with you in the ark. Mikol basar, from all flesh, which means birds, creepy things, everything. Ba'ef u'ba'behema, and the birds and the animals, chol ha-remes ha-remes ha-la'aretz, all the creepy things creeping on the earth, ha'itzei itach, take out with you, v'shartzu ba'aretz, they should, so to speak, team on the earth, meaning they should bug out, meaning like bugs multiply a lot, u'paru v'rav al-earth, they should be fruitful and multiply on the earth. Okay? So he says, order them out, get rid of them, take them out of the ark. In other words, as Mefarshim explained, Hashem didn't tell him, just open the door and let a stampede come out. Hashem told Noach, you took care of them inside, make sure they come out in orderly fashion. Line up by the flag, you know, just let them go out peacefully. Okay. Vayetze Noach, and then listen to this pasuk now. So until now, the pasuk just says, Noach, Mrs. Noach, the boys and Mrs. boys. What does it say? Vayetze Noach. Noach went out. Who went out with him? One of his sons. Then it says, V'ishtai, again separate. Unishev anavimei. Itai. So again, the Torah just said, go out, husband and wife together. Then when they went out men and then the women. Like, that's not what Hashem told them to do. So the Mefarshim explain, they say this is practical. The Radak says it, by the way. The women were afraid to leave the ark. The unknown. Go out into a world that's destroyed. The women, you know, by nature are weaker. Or nothing personal, but, yeah. So,
careful.
I'm beyond that already.
Caution. More caution.
I'm beyond careful.
Caution. Good work for them.
So bottom line is, it says they rushed afraid to go out. So who went out first? The men went out, and then the women followed them out. That's how they entered. That answers simply. Okay. Another opinion says, why does it say that Noach went out, him and the boys, even though Hashem said to him, you should have children again? But Noach was afraid to. He said, God, I'm going to have kids in another flood. Until God promised him later on, they're going to learn soon, that there will be no more floods. And then Noach said, okay. Then he went back to his wife.
But we have flood, no?
Huh?
Now we have flood, no?
When?
Well, like this one.
The flood like this?
Only in New Orleans.
The whole world?
All over the world, 40 days, 40 nights.
Noah had
Assimilation. Officially, Noach didn't have any other children. Is it possible Noach had other children? Listen, a lot of names are not mentioned in Chumash. It says Adam had the kids. The next guy had Vayele Banim Ubanis. By Noach, it says he had three sons. So simply, the pshat is he only had three sons. Did Noach have another Mrs. Noach later? I don't know. It doesn't say. Why doesn't the Torah say it? If it's not relevant in teaching us how to live, the Torah doesn't say it. Torah is a lesser constitution of life. If it's relevant in life, the Torah tells it to us. If it's not relevant in life, the Gemara says there are thousands and thousands and thousands of prophets. But any prophecy that was not relevant for all generations, what wasn't relevant for all generations, were not written. There are thousands and thousands of prophecies. But what's not relevant? You think God only spoke to Moshe what it says in the Chumash? I'm sure they had other conversations. But it's not relevant. It wasn't part of Torah, so it wasn't put into Torah. Did he have other kids? I don't know. But officially, it seems that Noach only had three kids. Okay. Rashi also says, by the way, the fact that they walked out as families means they accepted upon themselves that from now on there's only going to be purity in the families and everything else. Okay. Next. What?
This time, the only two people that are alive are Noah and his wife and the children.
And their wives.
That's it.
That's it. Finished. Finito.
Og. Og, yeah.
And Og, yeah. Og, yeah. Okay.
Og.
Og, the giant was holding onto the table.
Is he alive until the...
What the Torah clearly says is eight. But the Medrash says Og was alive and that's about it. What?
Nine people altogether.
They didn't even have a minion. With the women, they didn't even have a minion.
That's the problem.
Huh?
That was the problem.
They got the
what?
A whole new creation?
Noach restarted the whole world again. The world was pure, because sins corrupted it. The flood purified the world. Like we said, the 40 days represents the 40 soul, which is the size of a mikvah. And then Noach was now told by Hashem to rebuild and rejuvenate the world.
In Israel, nobody was there?
There were people in Israel. They died, even though the waters didn't fall in Israel, but the water from other places came to Israel and destroyed them.
Still flooded.
Yeah, it still flooded Israel.
So 40 days was the flood, right?
The rain.
But then the water kept going back and forth. The water
but
was...
You said 11...
The whole... No, because it was 150 days, the water was still going. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Then the water kept going... And with the strength and the for 150 days, and then it subsided. So the whole vacation was a year.
A long cruise.
Okay. Oh, one mistake. Kol achayim kol adam kol mishpachaseim, all by their families, and again by families meaning they remained pure. Yatzu min atev, they went out of the ark. Okay.
You didn't mention why they again separated. Why they separated?
We said because the men went out, the women were scared to go out.
That's the reason. I
yeah,
said.
That's what they say. Okay. Vayivin Noach mizbeach Hashem. Okay. Noach built an altar to Hashem. Now, why did he do it? So first of all, Noach understood I should give him a present. I should bring God a present. The Rambam says, by the way, okay, that you know what David and Shlomo Melech built the Mizbeach, the altar in the Beis HaMikdash? That was the exact place that Noach built his Mizbeach, that the Torah says he built a Mizbeach. And the Rambam adds, it's also from the Gemara and Midrashim, that after Adam Arishan, yeah, that was the place Avram brought up Yisroch as the Akedah, and that was the place after Adam was created. It says in the Midrash, and the Rambam makes it down, that Adam Arishan said, you know what, I should thank God, he made me. Let me give him a thanks. So he built an altar, and he brought sacrifices to God. The same exact place that Adam built the altar to bring a korban was where Noach built it, where Avram brought Yitzchak up, where David HaMelech and Shlomo built the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash. It was all the same place. And Rambam adds to this, by the way, that this place of the Mizbeach was the earth, primary earth, that Adam HaRishon was created from. And Rambam adds, this is what the Gemara says, Adam mimakim kaparose nivra. A person was created from the place where his forgiveness is. So Noach understood a few things over here. Number one, Noach understood he was a mensch, right? God saved me. You say thank you. How do you say thank you to Hashem? You bring a korban, like in the time of the basement, korban toida. Thank you, one second. Another interpretation Noach said to himself, of the non-kosher animals, God told me to bring two. Of the kosher animals, God told me to bring 7, 7, 14, right? 14. Why? So obviously he wants me to bring them, part of them for a korban. That's why he built a mizbeach.
Wait a second.
How could he go from Turkey, Mount Ararat, all the way to Jerusalem?
He Ubered.
He took two of every animal on, correct?
Yeah, two of the treif animals.
Okay, so if he takes one of the treif animals and makes it a korban, how are they going to prove or who?
That's what I'm saying. Yes. That's why he took the kosher animals. But he said, why did God take me, tell me, that? Why didn't he keep two of the kosher animals also?
Yeah.
They would also multiply.
Yeah.
The answer is because he understood God probably wanted him to bring a korban afterwards, and therefore he told him to bring more.
Gotcha.
So how did he go from Turkey to Jerusalem? The long distance.
On a leash.
He lived.
He took helicopter. Well, how he got there?
He walked all this. He got on the horse.
He had a donkey Lexus.
That's a long distance for him.
Kava's a non-believer.
If you can live 900 years, you can walk along.
It didn't tell you how long it took him.
No, but it says he took a korban right after.
It doesn't say. He said he came out and he built an altar. Where he went?
2 years later.
He made aliyah. He went to Israel. Yeah.
I guess so.
He didn't need passports though then.
About the calendar, talking about the calendar. Who made calendar at that time for them? You see, going by sun or going by month?
They had calendars.
350, you told 364. I will make it calendar.
When did calendar start? The concept of months and days and years. When did that start?
It's almost
the beginning of creation.
From the beginning of creation.
Yeah, the 7 days.
Hashem created the world, the seventh, on Tishrei, Nisan, Achaydash Azalachem. Even the secular Goyim, by the Eden, was the people from Yisachar. But they had Yodei Yoitim. They were brilliant in astronomy. They understood the moon and the sun and the moon. How did they figure out everything in those days?
That's cool.
They're intelligent people.
Rambam make calendar.
Rambam, the calendar is way before the Rambam. The Jewish calendar that we have today was made by a grandson of Hillel. You know the famous Hillel?
Yeah.
His grandson, whose name was also Hillel, was the one that made a calendar until the end of all time. The 19-year cycle and the calendar the way we have it today. But there were calendars way before him. In Achashverosh's time, it says in the Megillah, Yedei Ha'itim, they knew how to figure out the solar and the... They were brilliant. They were brilliant. They understood it all. I'll give you an example. Okay, just to show, and this has nothing to do with the greatness. They tell a story that the Rashba was a contemporary after Rashi. Okay, but he was from the Rishonim. He once went to a foreign country. He heard a speech, not a 2-minute speech. He heard a long speech in a language he didn't know. He didn't know the language. When the guy finished the speech, the Rashba repeated the speech verbatim in a row, and then he repeated it backwards in a language he didn't know. Yeah? I don't think, I for sure can do it. I don't know if you can do it. Huh? I'm saying these people were brilliant.
They don't have pressure.
Avraham Avinu, they were all brilliant in the sciences and the things. They knew. They figured out they made whatever they made.
About astrology?
Huh? Not astrology. Astronomy.
Astronomy.
I mean, they knew astrology too, but, you know.
Library of Romans or Greeks, but they had a library that was like, and it was destroyed, but it was like many, many things that they had, information that no, we don't even have.
What does it say? The Rambam says, Avraham Avinu, I don't want to be make a mistake, I think Avraham Avinu wrote 400 books in idol worshipping.
He also wrote the
Sefer Yetzirah,
no?
No, Adam Yishmael Sefer Yetzirah.
Adam,
whatever. Say for a boy, they say, I think Avraham Avinu wrote. Bottom line is, these people knew the stars. They knew it. They knew the sun, they figured it out.
You can even see the stars at that time, right?
All the things we have today is based on their knowledge, what they knew. In other words, to put it into simple English, we have much more information than they had. But they had much better heads than we have. We have more information because it's a cumulative knowledge. But they were much infinitely great, brilliant, more brilliant, besides greater in Kedusha, the Neshama and all that. They were a bunch of brilliant people.
That's why Hashem gave them the law of...
In 200 years ago, 150 years ago, okay? In 100, it's brought down in books. It was not uncommon. It was not uncommon for a bar mitzvah kid to know the entire Shas, all the Gemara by heart. In fact, it was pretty common, they say. A 13-year-old kid knew the whole Shas by heart. You imagine a bar mitzvah kid today? Huh. Ain't getting there.
Forget about it.
Yeah. Unless you call Shas sports or something else, then maybe they know. But
football.
And that was common in those days to know the entire Shas by heart at the age of 13. I mean, it's not a... Okay. So, what did he do? Vayiv Neich Mizbech Hashem. The unanswered question, how did he get there? Okay, we don't have an answer for that one yet. Either he flew, walked, drove, cameled, donkeyed, whatever.
Hitched, yeah.
Hitched to ride. Vayikach mikol habei matera, he took from all the kosher animals... And Mikol Eifa Torah, and all the kosher birds, Vayal Eilus Bamizbeach, and he brought up a korban, a min, and the Mizbeach. Right? Now, what's interesting is, what does the Pasuk say, Vayivan Neach Mizbeach to whom? La Hashem. Not to Elohim. Right? It doesn't say, he brought a korban and made a Mizbeach La Elohim. The whole time, Vayidab Elohim, Vayidab Elohim, Vayidab Elohim. But the pasuk says, "Zevech lalokim yachram." It's a pasuk of Chumash. "Zevech lalokim yachram" simply means whoever brings sacrifice to other gods, yachram will be excommunicated. Bilti l'Hashem levadi. But in the deeper sense, you don't bring a korban to the name Elohim of severity. It's korban l'Hashem throughout Vayikra when the Torah speaks about korbanis. All the korban, it's all La Hashem, to the name of mercy. Yudkevavki, not the name of Elohim. So Neach builds this Mizbeach, La Hashem, to the name of Hashem. And by the way, the Mefarshim explained another interesting thing. Vayiven comes from the word Bina. Vayiven means to build. Right? Vayiven Neach, the Mefarshim explained, some of them learned, Vayiven Neach understood that he should make a Mizbeach Hashem. He should make an altar to Hashem, to thank Hashem for what he did for him. Umikolai Fatar, and he, from all the kosher birds. And he understood, like Rashi says, that's why he told me to bring in all these animals the way he did to Hashem. Vayal Elas ba Mizbeach. He brought these burnt offerings to the Mizbeach. Okay? Now, Noach obviously didn't bring all the kosher animals. He brought probably one of each type, whatever it is. But because Hashem wanted more of the kosher animals to
sacrifice.
No, to be in the world, to populate the world, right.
So how come the rest of animals, they lie now?
Huh?
If they bring limited number of the animals kosher, what's the rest of them? What happened? They are alive now.
They multiplied and they...
Well, they multiplied. They not the same kind. A different kind. Wasn't it the same kind?
What do you mean?
You have...
Axe is kosher.
So
he brought axe and the rest of the axes. They made it and, male and female, cows and oxen. And they procreated.
They say how many kind of animals?
Doesn't say how much he brought.
How many pieces?
No. Doesn't say.
That's it.
No. But the Mephoshim do say one more last thing, we'll stop it, we'll end here. But when it says he brought the korban, okay, Lahashem, what does that mean? He told God, really? I'm not bringing you my stuff to you. I'm bringing you your, it's all yours.
Yeah.
It wasn't Noach's, it was Hashem's, the world that belonged to Hashem. So Noach said, I'm bringing you your animals as a sacrifice. Okay.
It's a car.